Curriculum counts. Curriculum matters. Curriculum is crucial. It represents the decisions that we make about what we value for our students, for the future, for what they learn, for what they can do.
This is Teaching Today, brought to you by the Center for the Professional Education of Teachers at Teachers College, Columbia University. In conversation with teachers, researchers, and school leaders, we are dedicated to breaking down the problems, policies, and promising practices that define teaching today. Uniting theory and practice, CPET promotes rigorous and relevant scholarship and is committed to making excellent education accessible worldwide through personalized professional development.
Hey, Roberta.
Hey, Charisse.
You know, as we're preparing to go into another school year, and I know we're going to talk about curriculum a little bit later, but I'm just curious, like, what was your best subject when you were in school?
Not science, not math, not history. Are you catching a theme here?
Yeah, I am.
I always really loved, you know, my English classes and my English teachers. I really loved the arc of the story and narratives. And I really found, as may or may not be obvious, I really love discussions and talking about stories and here's what happened and breaking things down. So, you know, definitely ELA was one of my preferred subjects when I was a kid growing up. And I always prefer to figure things out as opposed to kind of memorizing the facts and the figures.
Okay. And I was a huge fan of journalism. That was my absolute favorite class, favorite subject. I did yearbook, I did the newspaper, and was determined that I was going to be an anchor person one day. But of course.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. I was all set.
Charisse Holloman, anchor woman.
And so that didn't happen. You know, I said, let me just go and become an English teacher and bring all my love for literature and into the curriculum. So that was my next best thing.
That's the next best thing. I think that it's pretty common for folks to sort of find a subject that they were personally interested in and then gravitate towards that subject when they make the choice to go into the field of education. I always felt like teaching English was like one of my dream jobs because you can kind of talk about anything, right? Like I was really, really into, like, I really wanted to be with kids and wanted to support kids, and I felt like English gave me the opportunity to explore any topic, any subject, any social issue, to really talk about like humanity and how we live life. And that was really inspiring to me, but it's also extremely overwhelming because I didn't ever really have a curriculum that I was like supposed to follow. The first job that I ever had as an English teacher, I met the department leader in the summer, sort of like early August, right, as I was getting hired to start school in September. And I was like, you know, so excited. And I wanted to prepare and I wanted to study and do my lesson plans and, you know, write out my curriculum and build out my unit plans. And I asked, you know, what am I supposed to teach? And she handed me a textbook and one piece of paper that basically said my kids need to read 6 books and do 6 book reports. And that's it. That's all I got. And it was really, really overwhelming to kind of be faced with being a brand new teacher and not really having anything that would ground me in what I was supposed to teach or how I was supposed to teach it.
Well, then I guess that makes this the perfect time to segue into our discussion about what to do with prepackaged curriculums and things like that.
Oh, look at you. Look how you did that.
Well, Roberta, I know sometimes we can go on. We get so excited talking to each other, but we do have our guests.
Let's get to it. I'm Roberta Linger-Kang, co-host of TG Today and the director of the Center for the Professional Education of Teachers.
I'm Charisse Holloman, lead professional development advisor and leadership specialist at the Center for the Professional Education of Teachers.
We're thrilled to have with us today colleague and friend, Courtney Brown. Courtney is the Senior Professional Development Advisor, new teacher network at TC Initiative Leader, and our Secondary Education Specialist. Hey, Court.
Hey, guys. So happy to be with you today.
Welcome back. All right.
And we also have with us Bina Clifford, who is a longtime friend, and she is a high school borough instructional lead. So welcome to the pod, Bina.
Thank you so much. It's so great to be here.
So today we're talking about prepackaged curriculum. And to kind of break that down a little bit, there's a difference, right, between kind of like a general curriculum map or curriculum that a teacher or a team of teachers might co-create and author themselves. And then there are, you know, people who spend their careers actually in curriculum development and curriculum design. They often end up working for publishing companies, large and small, and they put together what, you know, we might call a prepackaged curriculum or out of the box curriculum that has with it daily lesson plans, unit plans, student facing materials, the teacher's guide. Back in the day, these were really just textbooks, right? They were just like, here's the teacher's textbook and here's the student's textbook, and you worked your way through the textbook. But now curriculum design and prepackaged curriculums have gotten very, very sophisticated with lesson plans and differentiated instruction and online resources. And I'm really curious, Bina, from your perspective, what are some of the benefits of having a prepackaged curriculum? And maybe then what are some of the drawbacks?
So I've seen a couple of them, and I've used one of them back in the day when I was a new teacher. It was the ramp up model.
Mm-hmm. I was a ramp up teacher.
So it was prepackaged. It had the lesson plans. It had the student facing documents. It had how to say, what to say, everything. There was a brand new teacher working with me. She found it extremely helpful. I found it a bit restraining for me, right? I wanted to do a little bit more or a little differently, but I was married to that system. I had to follow that. And it was fine. It wasn't, you know, it was research-based. So I was guaranteed that my students would make progress. So I believed in it and I wanted to do it. I wanted to do what's good for the kids. So I used it. And the students made gains. But then we came to the first book was Monster, Walter Dean Myers. Many kids had read it in middle school. They complained. It was fine. Mm. They pushed through. The second book was Red Scarf Girl. They hated it. I hated it. And it became a huge point of contention to do it. Because if you're not passionate about it, you can't bring passion for the kids. So that became, and that's when I realized, you know, how much more important it is that I have a buy-in into the text I'm teaching or the material I'm teaching. And they gave you general materials for the students. My students had other needs that, not that they, the researchers didn't think of, but maybe they didn't think of all the students I would have in front of me. Right. I knew the students. My co-teacher, who was a special ed teacher or the L teacher, knew the kids. And we would modify some of those. But I don't know if we were doing the right thing. Like the people who were coming from the central were very upset that we were doing anything different. So that was the hindrances if we didn't buy into the book or if we didn't have all the accommodations necessary for our students. And it's following it so rigorously. So that was kind of my pros and cons with Ramp Up. That was the only one I've really experienced to that extent. Mm-hmm. Other than that, I was pretty much in the session like you, Roberta. I was told, here's the book room, here's the books, go teach. And that was very scary too, as a, mm-hmm. as a relatively new teacher, right? Like, I don't know what I'm doing. How do I know I'm going to get to cover the arc of the standard? Which books will help me cover the standards I need? Is it my choice? Is there a specific book that the kids should be reading in a specific grade? What are the requirements? What are the expectations? How will I know they got it? Those were a lot of concerns when it was purely teacher created. For me, there needs to be some kind of a balance from both ends. Some of the curriculums I have seen since then, some of the texts are too high level. The kids don't connect with those texts that come in the textbooks. Some of the texts the teachers don't connect with. Like, so where is that happy marriage where there is that teacher voice in that curriculum, but the materials are really, really hard to locate. If you're teaching five periods, you have one prep, you're meeting with other teachers for another period, and you have lunch one period, you really don't have a lot of time to go discover materials and that are appropriate for your students. So at what point do you use the materials, pick and choose from the textbooks or the pieces, and then modify them to make them yours? But that's hard work. That's very hard work.
You know, Bina and I go back a long way and have done a lot of sort of original curriculum development alongside teachers for a district. So I'm sort of thinking about that building from the ground up in comparison to some of what she talked about in terms of having a vetted or off the shelf curriculum. There really are some pros and cons. And Bina, I agree with so much of what you said. And I think so much of what you said is so right aligned and parallel to my thinking and experience. The cons, not to start with the negative, are that it can be restrictive and prescriptive to have a curriculum that actually doesn't know your students. And that's what I heard you say, and I really agree and would like to elevate that. You know, most curricula, as wonderful as the curriculum writers are, and we know some of them, I'm sure, they're not necessarily written for our students in front of us. So for example, Red Scarf Girl actually might've worked pretty well for my students that I taught for a while at Bronx Science, right? Potentially, but might not have worked well for your students. And I think that that's where the teacher's adaptation and knowledge of the students comes in, right? But being able to do that, to adapt and adjust a curriculum, is actually harder work and is a little more complicated, right, than it might sound. Because once we've swapped out a text, which I do think that teachers, we do need to do oftentimes or sometimes, is either swap out or pick a different text if it's offered to us in a program, curricular program. But then how does that impact the rest of the curriculum that's been given to us? Does it fit with the unit plan? Do the themes still work? Does the assessment still work? So to me, those are some of the cons, but a lot of the work around adjusting and adapting curriculum is knowing that once you make one change, you need to kind of follow those changes and see how to then adjust other aspects of the curriculum. I'm also thinking about this notion of fixed flex, which I think Roberta coined, which is where do we have room in a curriculum to change and swap things out? What makes sense? And what are some of the things that do meet our goals that we want to hang on to? And I think it's that, what are our larger goals and what are our goals for our students, as well as what's culturally relevant for our students? And how is that in the curriculum, or are there gaps in that curriculum that don't fit the needs of our students and some of the major skills, as you said? And I think also sometimes curricula is not written for our state, for example, and we might have end of year exams or key skills that we really need students to master. And they might not actually be embedded in the curriculum, in the instruction or the assessments. And I think those are some of the big questions that we need to ask and make it a complicated task, but important to adjust and adapt curriculum if we've been given it or it's off the shelf.
I really agree with what Bina, both you and Courtney are saying about what I teach needs to be geared towards my students. And, you know, I don't want to hate on Red Scarf Girl, because, you know, a pick for a reason. But I think that the point is that there are, you know, thousands of books that are published every year to identify just two that every ninth grader should read, or just two that every 10th grader should read, is so limiting. It's limiting for students and it's limiting for teachers. And it's that really restrictive space that makes it very difficult to kind of find your style and find your passion. But, you know, I think I also just want to acknowledge that pre-packaged curriculum are written for all subject areas. And so in ELA, we could be saying like, oh, I could read this book or this book or this book or this book, but you know, the Civil War is the Civil War, right? Or looking at like math standards or, you know, like different principles in sciences where the content is a little bit more fixed or the learning, the pieces of knowledge are a little bit more fixed. I'm just curious, and Bina, you have some perspectives as you know, working across schools and across districts and across teachers of many subject areas. You know, is it just a problem in or a challenge in sort of an ELA class where teachers want to have a lot of flexibility, or are there benefits and drawbacks to prepackaged curriculum across content areas?
So the one thing that I've seen that has been done really well is the passport curriculum for social studies by the New York City. I agree with you. You know, the Civil War was the Civil War. The Ottoman Empire is the Ottoman Empire. You need to know about it. But what they do in the passport is they give the teachers a selection of articles or texts to pick from, right? So say, for example, there are 5 pieces of text, 2 visuals, 2 written, a couple of different data points. The teacher can choose how to use that, which works very well in some situations when the teachers know how to use it. Right, the teachers need to know how to. So if it's you're changing which text or which document to give to students based on ability, based on being able to have access, or the students can manage this piece of information, it works well. When you just hand them out all together, still doesn't work. Teacher knowledge is still key to that, you know. But the passport does a good job if used properly. Again, it's pre-packaged. The teacher has to still adjust based on what the students need. Like the students still need the vocabulary. Do they need a graphic organizer? What do they need? The teacher still needs to adjust. But there is some choice. I agree with the math, and math, it's sequential. Like they build. There's not really a lot of choice with what they do. But they can still make some adjustments. When Courtney was working with our network, we worked on something called GRASS from the J. McTighe, Pratt Wiggins backward design. That allowed some room for negotiation for what the students would produce out of it rather than what's going in. So there was some degree of still some choice for the students in what they learn, how they show their learning.
What you're coming back to is the importance of choice for students and the importance of choice for teachers.
Absolutely.
Putting folks into like a very rigorous, you know, tunnel of like mile markers that must be hit, it can feel really decontextualized. And I think one of the aha moments that I had about prepackaged curriculum was that, you know, someone sitting in a, I think, probably a very nice, maybe it's a public office, maybe it's a private office, maybe it's their home office these days, you know, but, you know, looking out the window thinking, what should 10th graders know how to do? And curriculum designers have to, I mean, this is the job, right? They have to walk into that task imagining what the ideal student is like. That ideal student attends school every day. They remember everything that you taught them yesterday. They're leading in a very fixed time frame to, you know, end of unit assessments, that they're, you know, started the year on grade level and they'll end the year on grade level. Because this is a curriculum that is designed to, you know, move students along this imaginary sequence, this imaginary staircase of knowledge and skills that we're dreaming up for them. But in the real world, my students don't come to school every day, not in every class, not in every school. You know, some of our schools have students who are coming in way above what a standard grade level might look like, and others are having their students come below what that standard grade level might look like. And other teachers have students who are all over the map, especially in high school. You could have kids who span, you know, 7 to 10 years worth of reading grade levels. And so the idea that then I can just sort of follow this curriculum that had an ideal imagined student as its audience is a little contrived. And I think that that's what makes the implementation of prepackaged curriculum such a key factor in whether or not the expectation is that it is rigorously adhered to. Well, we're on day 10 and it's day 10. Where, you know, where is this task? Or if it's like something that's where teachers have flexibility to make those instructional decisions and then those instructional choices.
And one more thing, Roberta, that Courtney pointed out is the assessment. New York State has regions, and we have to help our students. It is our task to help the students pass them, and so they can move on, so they can graduate. And not all of those prepackaged curriculums understand the New York State region. They're very specific, and we need to help our students with the test prep as well. So I don't know if they understand all the needs that clearly.
I love what you and Roberta are both saying. And yes, I found that a lot of the work I've been doing frequently, working with a variety of packaged curriculum and listening to teachers across disciplines, is adjust them, make sure that they're adjusted for New York State, and that whether it's, you know, K through 5 or 6 through 8 or 9 through 12, that those skills, that vertical alignment, getting students to master the skills for those key assessments, as you said, graduation hinges on them in some cases, that it's embedded in there. I also, Roberta, I just really, my ears pricked up when you were talking about the notion that our students come in with a lot of different skills and some students are not in school every day, et cetera. The pacing has become a big part of the work that I believe we all need to do as coaches and educators, because if we as educators, teachers, heads of departments, even administrators and coaches, if we try to follow to the word, the prescriptive units and the pacing and the lessons to the day, oftentimes we need to either slow it down, focus in on a few key lessons and spend some more time on them. Sometimes we can't even get to all the units and all the wonderful lessons that are laid out for us. And I know that that's been a common issue and common to, I would say, most of the curricula that I've seen across disciplines. And Bina, to your point, and Passports is one great example of that, some of the HMH curricula that I've been working with that are now spreading across our districts in New York City, they do offer more, I don't want to use this word too loosely, but a little bit of a menu of options. You know, you can move some of the units around, you can actually pick and choose to differentiate some of the lessons, some of the text, some of the math problems. And I think that really is a more sophisticated and useful approach to curricular programs. So I've seen that there is more attention and more opportunity for kind of picking and choosing from a menu and piecing together a curriculum if you do it thoughtfully. But I think that that takes a lot of understanding of the curricula. And I think that's part of where the work starts for us, is really understanding what is this packaged curricula? How does it work? What's its language? What words is it using? What do they mean? Because I think each packaged curricula or each publishing house has its own approach. And sometimes they're, you know, UBD, similar to Grant Wiggins and Matigues that you mentioned, and many of us educators know UBD, so they're familiar. But for many of us, we might need to be translating some of the language used in the package curriculum and understanding the way it works in order to do this complicated work.
Yeah, and Courtney, just listening to this whole conversation, I want to take a bit of a different approach and kind of push back just a little. So I think about new teachers and like the story Roberta was telling, how she came in, she got a textbook, a piece of paper. So I think the ways that people approach prepackaged curriculum can always or oftentimes be determined by our experience level. I know we've been talking a lot about some of the challenges with prepackaged curriculum, particularly when it comes to implementation and things like that. But I oftentimes think about novice teachers and what some of those teachers may need. So imagine as we're going back, a teacher comes in and there's a new science curriculum or social studies or ELA or any kind of new curriculum. What's some advice? Like, what would be the first step? Like, what should I do? Brand new teacher looking at this curriculum, like, what are some things I should do?
I think there's this sort of marriage, this dance I've been thinking about, where when you're developing curriculum, you're looking at the curriculum. So let's say it is a boxed curriculum. And then you're also thinking about your schools and students' needs. So it depends, you know, it depends on your approach. But I think you need to go deeply into, okay, at my school and for my students in this year, for example, what are the expectations? What are the key skills? What are the key tasks or end of year assessments? And really learn and do some backwards planning, so to speak, where you really understand what is our mission here? What are our goals for this year or this curriculum? And getting clear on that. That might mean having some meetings with a lead teacher, with your department, with your grade level. And then the other piece of it, and this is where the dance comes in, I think, is really understanding how that curriculum that you've been handed works, as we were talking about earlier. What are the units? What's the language in it? Where are your choices? Where's your flexibility? So really asking those big questions and in the best case, working alongside some stakeholders in the situation with you. I think that's really important so that you don't go off on a limb and start to adjust or adapt or think you have to do it prescriptively when there might be some more information that you need to know about your students, your school, the expectations, even the district, and then also what do you need to know about that curriculum to work with it and to kind of marry them. So that's something that I would say is really important.
Thank you, Courtney. You're talking about the new teacher who's struggling, who just walked in, brand new. On my end, I've also been working with a handful of principals and helping them set up structures, right? Learning from our prior experience, it's the structure at the school that helps you sustain a curriculum, not having to unbox every time a new teacher comes in. So one of the things that my schools have been doing is saving those unit plans from this year. So I'm the ninth grade teacher of science. I save my daily lesson plans in my unit plan together on a folder that belongs to the school, an electronic folder. So when you walk in as a brand new teacher and I'm now teaching chemistry, you have the living environment unit plans and lessons that are relevant to our school. Now you have a different batch of students and you have to know them, but somebody's had a chance to digest this for you and you have a digested version of it. And a good version, which has been approved by the department lead, by the principal, and is now given to you. So slightly less work and slightly prepared, but not prescriptive. So there is it's a balance that you still have to do some work on it with your teacher leader and understanding your students, but it's not like you're pulling it out of the box for the very first time, because that takes a lot of effort and a lot of work.
I agree 100%, Bina, with what you said.
I think it's so important to talk about those school structures, Bina, because one of the things I think people believe that they're getting when they buy a prepackaged curriculum is, oh, I'm going to take the thinking out of what to teach. I don't want my teachers to have to spend too much time designing their own curriculum. It's really time consuming. Let me just buy them this textbook or buy them this, this curriculum that has everything in it. And then we don't have to spend time on it. And I think that that's a myth in many ways, because no matter whether you're purchasing a curriculum or you're creating the curriculum, we have to spend time figuring out what and how we're going to teach, whether that's digesting something like an internalizing it for my own self, or whether that's creating something from the ground up, but spending time talking, not just in isolation, me alone in my classroom with the door closed, figuring out what's going to happen tomorrow, but in community. And, that's one of the challenges that I've seen a lot of schools struggle with, is that balance between intellectual property and kind of community mindedness. If I spend lots and lots of time figuring out how to take this curriculum and how to apply it to my own students, and I create my own unit plans, a lot of teachers feel a deep and personal investment in the intellectual work that went into that, and sometimes are reticent to just hand it over to the next person. Sometimes they want to take it with them. And I've seen a lot of schools really wrestle with what belongs to the school and what belongs to the individual professional.
So this principal, one of the principals that I'm talking about, a lot of time, like for the teachers to design the units by paying them for the time. So mm-hmm. then while it is your intellectual property, it was done on DOE dime. So it's mm-hmm. mine. And it was vetted by a team of teachers. So an English teacher would present, or a social studies teacher would present. The other social studies teacher's intellectual time was also dedicated to vet it and give feedback. So then it becomes the property of the school. You could take a copy of it. Nobody's saying no to that, you know, but it's on the school drive. Mm-hmm. And that's the expectation the principal put in. So the school set up a drive for each department, for each teacher, mm-hmm. and you're expected to drop your unit plan in there, your box of lesson plans in there. Mm-hmm. You're not being evaluated on it. There's no evaluation on it. It's just dropping everything in there, and you're dropping samples of student work in there, whether the unit worked, didn't work, worked really well, or failed miserably, mm-hmm. whatever. You know, yeah. you're dropping all of those pieces in there. This way we could have some reflection on not to do it again or do it again.
So I guess if I were to summarize for, not to say that you all went off on a tangent, because you never do that. But if I were to summarize this for the new teacher who's listening, like, okay, what were they saying? I guess in a nutshell, what we're saying is that we're recommending that new teachers seek out other colleagues and not do this work in isolation, and maybe do some of this work in community.
100%, Charisse, 100%. And additionally, that we advocate and support school leaders to set up systems and time for that to be done, because it's crucial.
Charisse, I think that's really important, that connection to community. And Bina, you were talking about the same thing, that when we're working on it together as a community, it becomes ours. We're spending time on it. We're really working on it together. And I think that that's really critical, because in the past, I think the narrative of like the teacher alone in the classroom, just determining themselves what it is that they want to teach and kind of, you know, going their own way, is really problematic. We have students who get transferred halfway through the year from one class to another class to another class. And if every time, you know, in a ninth grade student gets moved to a different teacher, if the curriculum is different, they're studying completely different units, they don't have any coherence within the school or within a district, especially in districts where you have a high level of mobility. So there are some good reasons and some strategic reasons for schools to want to have aligned curriculum and some aligned unit plans, and having their teachers really work collaboratively to create documents that create a blueprint for what students should know and be able to do between the beginning and the end of the year. But if we can zoom out a little bit outside of just the individual decision-making process, how important is a curriculum really? Like, does it matter which one I use or what I do? What's the impact of curriculum and education in general? And like, what makes it so important?
Curriculum counts. Curriculum matters. Curriculum is crucial. It represents the decisions that we make about what we value for our students, for the future, for what they learn, for what they can do. It is really important that we align our curriculum, because if our students go into one grade and then they backslide and the learning is not built into the next grade, or it's just an overlap of what they did the year before, we are not serving our students well, and we are not teaching them, and we are not harnessing their potential. So I think that curriculum is crucial. And I would like to give just a little plug for definitely culturally relevant, responsive, and sustaining education, that we look at our curriculum and we look at the students in front of us and their futures and their needs and their passions and potential as we move into the future and think about curriculum and develop it.
So during my work with curriculum design, one of the things that I have learned is sometimes the teachers don't even know what standards they're targeting in their unit. Curriculum helps them see those specific standards that are not repeated, but different ones are addressed. All of these standards are addressed. It also develops the arc of learning, right? What do you start with in ninth grade? What should you read? What would help you prepare for that critical thinking level that you need in 12th grade. How do you begin a research paper in 9th grade? Maybe 2 pages, maybe with the articles the teacher gives you, to independence in 12th grade. Like, how do you build that arc vertically? Without that, you're just coming and going without, without a purpose almost, right? You're doing things that are fun, that might seem interesting. The kids might be engaged, quote unquote, engaged. But are they really learning to think critically, which is what they need to get to the next level, whether they choose college or not? That's for them. But they need to be thinking critically. And are you pointing those pieces out throughout the curriculum, throughout their years in high school?
And I think the last thing I would add, Roberta, I'll just chime in real quickly, is do you guys remember when we were back in undergrad and grad school learning about curriculum? And remember how we talked about like the written curriculum, the taught curriculum, the hidden curriculum, and just all those different kind of aspects of curriculum? And I think at the time I didn't necessarily understand it, but I do understand it a lot more. Because I think when we start talking about like school culture and things of that nature, we start seeing some of the nuances between like what's written down and how it's being taught. And I think some of those different definitions can help define and describe how we teach the curriculum.
And thinking about curriculum design, it's really valuable to begin to question to what extent my curriculum is connected to culturally relevant, responsive, and sustaining practices. At CPET, we have developed the Centering Students Guidebook for Implementing Culturally Relevant and Sustaining Education, which provides an in-depth analysis of CRSE principles and attributes, including connections between the Danielson Framework for Teaching and the Collaborative for Academic, Social, and Emotional Learning, or CASEL framework for SEL. This guidebook provides attributes and look-fors that teachers and school leaders can use to inventory curriculum and as a starting point to identify gaps and opportunities for revision. To learn more about the CRSE guidebook, visit our website. To learn more about the Centering Students Guidebook, Culturally Relevant, Responsive, and Sustaining Education, or other curriculum practices, visit our website, tc.edu/CPET. Now, let's rejoin the panel.
This has been a fantastic conversation that we've been having, Roberta. I really hate that it's drawing to a close. And because we've said so much, I'm wondering if someone only listened to this last portion of this recording, what would be the advice that you would want to offer a teacher who is coming into a prepackaged curriculum?
Don't take it at face value. Investigate how it's being used at your school, how you're expected to use it. Seek your community and seek out how you might use it most appropriately and well. And that means learning about your students, your school if you're a new teacher, the expectations for your department or grade level, and then going to the curriculum and really delving into it to understand it and understand how you as the expert and the educator can adjust and adapt it to make it your own and make it work for your students.
I agree with Courtney. You know, you have to learn what it is, what is in the curriculum, what's on the platform, what's available. It'll make your life easy. I guarantee that, right? Like they're designed, they're putting a lot of work on that. But how does it apply to your students? You have to first know your students and you have to find the right match. What works in the unit and what works for your students. And then you're the key factor in presenting this information. What works for you? How will you assess this? So like looking at all those components and taking a pause, thinking about it before you jump into it.
article, Adapting Packaged Curricula, Promising Practices for Making Your Own, our colleague, Dr. Christina Compton says, implementing packaged curricula takes a great deal of patience, persistence, and flexibility. We know that no curriculum can be implemented as it's written if it's going to meet the needs and the goals of a particular school community. We have to work strategically, creatively, and collaboratively with our peers to examine the curricula, consider aspects we can and should implement, and what needs to be revised, replaced, or even eliminated. This is Teaching Today. I'm Roberta Langer-Kang.
And I'm Cherise Holloman. I want to say another thank you to our panelists, Courtney Brown and Bina Clifford.
It was so great to get to be with you guys, Bina, Cherise, and Roberta. Thank you so much for the opportunity.
Thank you guys for the opportunity. I'm so excited about this.
Great. Thank you. Thank you, Courtney and Bina. And a huge shout out to our post-production crew, woo-hoo, Isaac Hodgman and Katie Mills. Raise the roof.
Are we still doing that? Are we still raising roofs? Okay.
We are, Roberta. We're still raising it.
We're still raising roofs. We're still raising roofs and we're still flipping scripts. I got it. Okay. We think your voice matters. Send us your education questions, concerns, and promising practices, and we'll address them. Subscribe to the pod or leave a review and follow us on social media where you can find us at TCCPET, or you can send an email to cpet@tc.edu.
And we'll be back in your feed next time with an episode on designing your own curriculum.
Yeah, because after this episode, people are like, toss that curriculum. No, don't throw it out. Don't throw it out. It's good. It's good. It's
not
good.
Not yet.
But until then,
take care.
And talk soon.